Sunday! Every Sunday, side by side at the microphone for the green light to the speed trap, Ray Guarino and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Hear relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! It's mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Feed, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Even!
It's Motormouth Radio, your one-hour automotive talk show right here on Long Island. I'm not on Long Island. I'm Chris Switzer. Of course, the man of the hour, the host of this fine program, Ray Guarino, is with us. And he is with us with a soup can and a string, if I'm not mistaken, because his internet has decided to fly the coop. Ray, are you with us?
Yes, Chris. Thank you. I have two carrier pigeons, three chickens, and a goat that are actually circling the house right now with a Variac, winding the coil as we speak to make the electromagnetic induction to let my voice resonate through this speaker and microphone so you can hear me.
Well, you have crisp, clear tones at this very moment, but we don't know. This show may turn into a solo.
Right.
Sooner than we think. And that is the reason why I opened the show today, because at least my internet is still attached to the rubber band and the balsa wood plane.
Right. That's why I picked a guy named Han to do the show with. Get it?
Han? Han Solo?
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes, in the Millennium Falcon or whatever that thing was. So not using this show and the fact that we're held together with tape and glue, not using this show as a guide, but my first question is, how was your week?
It was very hot and sweaty, darn it.
Wow,
too bad. I was down to shop a couple of times, and it's brutal, but what's worse, and this is something, you know, everybody handles it, you know, we all know, everybody knows, my family knows, of course, that you and I, of course, are polar opposites when it comes to polar temperatures.
Yes.
And because, you know, even my wife and daughter had said, oh, I bet you Chris loves this weather. I'm like, yes.
Love it. Yep.
If he could be an iguana on a rock, yes.
I do.
I, on the other hand, do not. And the worst part was, being at the shop, I was working on my car, and I'm at the point of putting trim together and finishing, you know, finish things, the stuff that you have to be careful with because I have new paint.
Right.
And I found if I stayed in the shop for like an hour, hour and a half, and, yeah, you know, I tied a rag around my head, had the fan on. I just soldiered through it. I worked slowly. If I took a break and went into the office where the AC is, after my body acclimated to that, I felt worse. It's like, I didn't want to go back out there again.
Oh.
But I had to.
I love this weather. And yeah, you may think I'm berserk about it, but I do. The thing that I have to admit, I would have to use the bandana around the head as well, because the sweat getting in your eye certainly burns. And that's the worst part, but I don't really, really mind this. This is what I have to do. The only thing I have to do is sweep the floor of the garage really well. And the only reason being is because the second your body is a sweaty mess and you lie on the concrete, you're going to attract every single little pebble and dirt speck and whatever, and that gets everywhere. Next thing you know, you're scratching up a storm because it's like now you're completely covered in sticky, gravelly, dirty stuff. So it's always sweeping up. I'm always sweeping up the garage floor. But other than those two things, I'm in heaven.
Let me ask you this. What percentage of Siciliano are you? I know I used to this many years ago, but a
good portion.
Yeah, and that's why. Because all the guys I know that have Siciliano in them, they just, I mean, I know a guy who's a bricklayer for a living. Another guy did outdoor, like landscaping and gardening. All the Sicilians, they just, they love this weather. But like, I can't stand the cold. Oh, my bones ache. Like, yeah, I got
it. It was just a brief history. It comes from my mother's side. And my mom used to leave the house in the wintertime at a steady 90 degrees in the house. I never heard the gas burner shut off. If it shut off, it was broken. I'm serious. Wow. And my friends would, if they were coming over the house when we were teenagers, my friends were coming over the house, they would wear like layers of clothes. And they would walk in and like layers would just start flying off. Because they knew they were in the hot box. And if they were coming in from outside where it was like 20, 30, 40 degrees, walking into a steady 90, they were like, ah, there would be clothes everywhere. Like, whose sweatshirt is this? Whose pair of pants is this? You know, it was always these questions. So, yeah, and I was fine with it.
I know. I got to tell you something. Me, I'm an Abaddon, you know, from Northern Italy. So that's why the light hair and the light eyes and all that. So, you know, we don't mind stuff. But this week, I've been watching our buddy Clay Kuhn, of course, from Kuhn Trucking, go to YouTube and just put in Kuhn Trucking or Clay Kuhn, K-O-O-N. You'll find his years worth of videos. And he's down in Mississippi, in Boonville, Mississippi. And he's been complaining. I mean, there was a video of him where he looked like he was about to pass out. Now, when a local gets like that, my God, I feel so bad for these guys. Like, he goes on the tool truck, it's like, thank God for the AC. Every shop has to have some kind of air management or a mister or AC or something. And I think you got to work that into your capital plan, because you have guys dropping dead. I know I would, so God bless him.
I was out mowing the lawn, 95 degrees.
Yeah.
Literally, just mowing the lawn. I had a laugh because I opened up one of the gas cans and it went like you just heard the air escape from it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I better go crack some of the, because I have a couple of gas cans around that just have regular you know, fuel in them.
You know, I do that occasionally just to vent them, because they do. They will build that pressure, and you want to vent them out.
Mm-hmm. Every once in a while, walk around.
The shop has been miserable, but I'm getting work done. I am getting stuff done. And I was over there yesterday again, and I'm at the point where, you know, actually I had a lot of my stainless steel moldings, the window moldings, polished by a guy a number of years ago.
Right.
And he did them on the side after work, and, you know, $100 here, $100 there. And I got them back in cellophane. I didn't open them because I didn't want to scratch them.
Sure.
Now Mike had unwrapped some of them and said, hey, Ray, you know, some of these windshield reveals, there's a little dent here, a little dent there. I said, yeah, the guy didn't do any massaging. He only polished. He goes, you know, I know you have a new polisher now. Maybe you want to have the guy look at these. So I did. Mm. And yesterday I had put the Beltline moldings on that are at the top of the door, you know, right under the glass. And these came from this the new guy. Actually, the guy who shopped, his name is Kevin. He's down by where Mikey T's shop used to be in Babylon. Okay. And I put them on, and like I wiped them on a microfiber rag. I went, oh, my word. It looked like mirror-finished chrome.
Now, let me ask you a question before you continue. How did you put those on?
Okay. The Beltline molding, you can't take the Beltline off on the door until you got to take the window out. You got to take the glass out because of the screws go through that molding. The stainless steel molding has a rubber wiper attached to it.
Right.
So the screw goes through the rubber, through the stainless into the door.
Okay.
And if the glass is in, you can't get low enough. So you have to take the glass out. The other side of the glass has the felt strip, the felt wiper. So, but they literally just cuff. It's a cuff. It just slides right over the top of the door. You know, and then you tap it forward or back to align the holes correctly. So I'm playing, you know, shoemaker with the little hammer, you know, with being careful of the stainless end of the paint.
Sure.
But what I did, the right side, the belt line looked gorgeous. Then I said, all right, let me get brave. Let me put the drip moldings on for the, over the, you know, over the windows and then down the back quarter glass.
Now those just snap in, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Now I was worried about that because between the paint and the catalytic clear, I was afraid it was going to be very hard to get them on.
Right.
And Mike said, yeah, you may have to muscle them. Sometimes we tap them, you use your fist, you use a little rubber hammer, you know, you do what you got to do. I was going to wait for him, and I said, hey, listen, I'm a big boy. I should just do this. What the hell? It's my car. And I did. I put the long drip rail over the roof, which was done by this other guy. And as soon as I looked at it, I'm like, this is disgusting. The quality of polish between the two parts was night and day. And I said, you know what? I made the command decision. I got to take this off and send the four pieces, because it's right and left over the glass, and then there's two that come down on the back of the quarter glass.
Right.
I got to send these to this other guy, to Kevin, and have him repolish them so they'll match the belt line in quality. Then I couldn't get the damn thing off.
Oh.
I'm behind it with a plastic tool and a hammer and hitting, and I did dent it a little. I know he can fix that. But I was like, geez, you know, it just goes to show you, because I didn't open those pieces when I got them back to preserve them. Now I'm paying to polish them twice.
Oh, and now mind you, did they come off eventually? Did you get them off?
I only put the one on. I did get it off, and I did pull some paint up. It was inevitable. But you know what? That's going to be under that moldy anyway. So you touch it up, you never see it.
Right, you know, right. Oh, no, I'm thinking that you pulled paint off the edge of the roof or something next to it.
No.
Oh, how frustrating was that? What do you do? Do you like stand back and go, you know what? Let me just go get a drink or some little libation or something.
I said to myself, why the hell? I kind of saw it before I finished. I'm thinking, why did I make the final couple of pounds with my fist to send it home? I should have just stopped when I had 6 inches of it. That's when I said, hey, you know what? The next thing I went to do is put the wheel well moldings on the car, in the wheel wells. And I saw that I didn't have screws. I looked in my Ames catalog. They have a set of beautiful reproduction screws.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, you know what? I'm done for the day. I'm done. Like, before I drop and make anything worse, I'm going to order the screws. I'm going to order a couple little pieces I need. And that's it. I already been there for like 4 hours. And I said, that's all in a day.
I take a look at some of these cars when Lewis Lee we're friends on Facebook, and I will see some of his posts, and he has pictures of some of these lowriders that are just simply works of art. These 64 Chevys, these 59 Chevy convertibles, these California lowriders that are just works of art. And you see some of the chrome that was put on there, and you have to just look at these things in awe and say, how did they do that? Like, who has got the patience to A, paint it that way, B, shine it that way, and C, put everything together so you're not scratching any of it? Because you could look, there's not a, you could see on paint like that, on workmanship and craftsmanship like that, you'll see a touch-up dot from a mile away.
Oh,
but
yeah.
None. There are none to be found. And I can't stop looking at some of this stuff. It's just extraordinary. And then I think about, like, some of the frustrations that you and I have to do, because here I did the same thing. I'm a panel guy. You know, I always, all the panels have to be right. All the panels have to be straight. And on the 300, no panel is right. No panel is straight. And I just wanted to take the rear quarter panel cap that sits above the bumper and just move it, just align it maybe a 64th of an inch. Because you know, when you run your hand down the side of the car with a rag or something and you get to that cap, and it's like boom, boom, you feel like a little, it's like when you put the AFX track together and it's got like a little bump in it, and the car comes along, goes click right over that little track. It makes me nuts. So I went to go move it, and of course I shift it, and the paint all along that edge goes flying off. Now it's like, I know the car. I know it's not perfect. I know I'm not going to be heartbroken over this. I went and got some crazy glue, found the chips on the floor, and stuck them all back where they were.
Oh, good.
Called it a day. But I'm just saying, that's just because I know one day if I ever decide, I will paint this thing. But it's not. I'm not going to get as heartbroken as you are if any of the paint flies off it, because I didn't spend the money you spent on a paint job. But it's just moving that molding or that cap, that end cap, and the what would you say, the frustration that goes along with it is just monumental.
I got to tell you something. There's a guy at the shop, a new guy that they hired, one of Mike Jr.'s friends. He's, you know, Mike's age, and he's a bit of a – he's a wise ass is what he is. I don't know where to put it. But he's like you. He's a wise ass, but under the table wise ass. Like, he'll say things kind of on the like almost if you don't listen to him, you don't catch it because he's quiet.
I don't know if I should be flattered or insulted.
But he's a bona fide wise ass. And I'm on to him. You know, now I'm on to him because I listened to him enough and I got it. So he was, a couple of days ago, I got it started the car again. And he was like, he came in, he goes, oh man, car sounds great. He goes, I love that smell. I'm like, what? Overly rich exhaust enough that could choke you? He goes, yeah, it's like a, because he's got a brand new Mustang, but his dad has older cars. And I said, hey, come huff it in my garage anytime you want, kid. Sure. No problem. You kill some brain cells. But he was doing something. He was working on an electrical switch. He was playing with the breaker box. And, of course, he had a screwdriver in his hand. And he went, oh, gee, like I'm sorry, but I scratched your quarter panel, you know?
Oh.
So I looked at him and I said, yeah. I said, well, good thing the car's in a shop that does paint and bodywork because the guys that painted it can fix it. And he looks at me like, that's it? You know, like, you're not freaking out? And I'm like, no, I got your number, kid. I know what you're doing. I know you're a wise ass. So, and then a couple of days later, the guy who works there, who's also he's a body guy. I lowered the car down. He said the same thing. He made a comment about scratching the car. And I said, listen, Derek, I said, if you scratch the car, I know you can fix it. I said, so I'm not worried about it. I'm like, I'm not that guy who's going to be like, you know, climbing the wall going, yeah, maybe I'll take you out at 100 yards with a hunting rifle. I don't know, but probably not. I'm, you know, you're going to fix it. You're better at, you know what you're doing. I don't do that. So.
Exactly. No, it's the truth. I had a problem this week that I am probably going to have to go to a collision shop for.
Really?
Yeah, one of these issues. It's one of those issues that I have to tread lightly when I speak of it. But yeah. We were on the Garden State, and of course, heading up the Garden State. It's the first time I've literally been out of Connecticut in 7 months, and we're driving along, and I'm looking at the sides on the Garden State, and I see a lot of deer.
Yeah,
and the thought in my head was, you better be careful. So driving along, and it went from I think it was around 9 o'clock at night. It had just gotten dark completely. And there was a guy in front of me in the fast lane, and I was right behind him in the slow lane. And he backed away, like he slowed down in the fast lane. So I was passing him in the slow lane. And as he slowed down, something darted out and missed him, but I got him. it was a little miniature. Wow. And he was doing about, I think he was running about 50, but I was doing about 70.
Good.
Yeah, I got him. It's the biggest thing I've ever hit on the road.
how much of an impact was there?
Well, it was pretty much impactful under the bumper of my Mazda. I have the CX-9 that my wife uses, and it crushed the plastic bumper. What would you say? What's the word I'm looking for? Not a scutcheon, the
under bumper on those cars.
Yeah. The plastic, look at that. I can't even think of the word. Jeez. Well, anyway, it crushed that bumper affair. But what's funny is that it's very hollow in there, and it wiped out the fog light. It took out the lining, which we used to call the wheel well. It took that out. And fascia, that's the word I was looking for.
Okay.
The fascia, it's not really a bumper, but it missed the impact where the impact bumper, which sits directly under the grill. It took out everything under the headlight. So I'm looking at this going, if I was in Long Island, I know exactly where to go to get this repaired, but I'm not. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, what do? You reestablish a relationship with a collision guy? Which, you know what, is probably not a bad idea. And that's something that I'm pursuing. But as I'm pursuing this, I'm also putting on the table me fixing it myself. Okay. And it can be done. It can be done, but it's just a matter of, you know, when you talk about your time versus money. Yeah. And right about now, I don't have the time to literally order the parts and get everything together. And I know exactly what I need. And I had to laugh because I showed up and got a quote from one guy and he's looking over the car. And I've come to realize I had to say something. And I said, you know, I've been on your side of the fence more than I've been on this side of the fence. And he stopped and he looked up. I didn't want to go any further and offer any more information, but I just left it there. Yeah.
Well, you know, the other thing too is that, like, the learning curve. Case in point, this week I noticed, you know, my older daughter and her boyfriend were over, and they, as they leave in her RAV4, I noticed the left front headlight was out on the truck.
Oh, okay.
So I let them know. Now, I know, you know, she bought that used, and actually Mike Jr. spotted it one day when I had it at the shop. Right. That someone had put in a xenon conversion, a light conversion in the truck.
Okay.
Now, very popular. It's a transformer, high voltage transformer, and it just xenon bulb goes into the housing and blah blah blah. So, I told him about it. He goes, you know what? Take them both out. Go back to halogen bulbs. He goes, those. And I know that guys who have bought cheap conversions, they sometimes catch fire, and mm-hmm. and they've taken out. You know, I said, all right. So I looked at it. It doesn't look to be a cheap one at all. All the connectors are weather packed. They're tight. It's very nice. Nice quality construction. It just, you know, one bulb failed.
Right.
And it's all. And I said, my concern is it plug and play or did they cut wires?
Right.
I mean, I can solder the wires. I can fix them. But I'd rather. I'm hoping I have virgin harnesses to deal with here because, you know.
Yes.
So anyway, I take a look and I said, okay. Plug and play. Beautiful. I unplugged it. I put a 9006 halogen bulb into the bulb socket, turned the headlights on and the bulb lit. I'm like, okay, I know my harness is good. Everything. I'm going to be fine here.
Yeah, it sounds easy.
But yeah, and that's where it stopped. Oh. Then I said, okay. So I'm looking at the back of the headlight housing and the way this xenon conversion went in, where the bulb usually would go into the big hole and twist like a quarter turn.
Sure.
Now this round, flat plate with three Phillips head screws holding it. I'm like, okay, that's part of the xenon conversion. Did they do away with the standard bulb? Do I have to buy headlight housings? You know, that's my question.
Right.
So I said, let me take the headlight out and look at it closer on the bench. Well, I take a couple of obvious screws out, and the thing is rock solid still. And I'm thinking, don't tell me. And I verified that I was right. You have to take the whole bumper cover off to get the headlight housings out of this
Yes,
thing.
You do.
There you go. Believe it or not, with all the stuff I've done in my life and I've done recently mechanically, I've never taken a late model bumper cover off. I've seen the guys do it. I see them do it and like I turn around and it's done. But right. I haven't. Some of them have little screws, like 4 millimeter screws that these guys have to buy from the I think Snap-on and Matco sells them. They're like 8-inch long sockets mm-hmm. that go through the fender well to get to these little. Who the hell designed that? I want to find that guy. You know? So I don't even know, you know, what tools I need. I said, you know what? That's luckily the guys I work with are associated. They're a body shop, so this is going to go over to them, and they're going to. I'm going to have them take the bumper cover off for me. So.
Right. Well, it's really from what I was able to. Research for the Mazda, there's two screws. Well, you pop the hood, there's two screws up on top on either side of the grill. They come off. Then you go around to the wheel well, the front wheel well itself, and on the Mazda, it has these pieces of trim that attach to the very ends of the fascia. They come off with the snap clips, and then there's two screws there. They come off. Then there's like 8 millimeter screws. There's about 10 of them that run along the chin of the of the bumper.
Right.
Once they all come off, and this is what the research says, you're able to grab hold of the top of the grill, lift it up, and pull it towards you.
Yeah.
The whole shebang is going to come off. And at that point, you unplug your fog lights or whatever have you, and the whole thing gets set aside. Now you're looking at the headlights, just the headlights dead on. There's nothing there. There's just the center impact bar, the radiator, and or the condenser, and the two headlights. So it's easy to get to. So basically, from what I was reading, it's not really a hard job. You just need more space than time, basically, because you have to lay this bumper cover there.
I trip over bumper covers all day long. That's all I do is trip over bumper covers. I would say something. You know, for those clips, you can use a little crow's foot tool that that's like on a screwdriver handle. I actually have a pair of pliers. They're either KD or Lang, both great companies for hand tools. And it's like a pair of pliers that scissor that get, and they're very, very thin. So they get under that clip and they'll pop it down. Yep. And also that's when you want to use your nice little, that's when you want that 3/8 battery powered, the impact driver to zip those little 8mm bolts off. And don't forget the magnetic tray to put them in.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're absolutely right about that clip removal tool. I need one because I keep breaking clips. When I did the spark plugs in the Explorer, there's the harness that runs around the top of the motor and then runs along the passenger side. And it has all of those type of clips where you have to pull the cap or pull it. It looks like a nail, a plastic nail. It's the head of a nail. And you have to pull that out. Well, you need that prying action, that fork prying screwdriver action to get in there to wrestle that thing. Because I tried a pair of needle nose. I figured, two screwdrivers and a needle nose. I'll do this, no problem. Nope. Breaks instantly. You break it instantly.
That follows the dictum of every problem is a every problem is a nail. The only tool you have is a hammer. But like I said, look into those specialty tools. I'll send you a picture of the tool. I'll go to the shop and I'll take a picture of it. Those pliers are phenomenal. And like I said, companies like Lyle, KD, Lang, Capri that are selling OTC, that sell those specialty tools. You don't have to pay tool truck. I sound like a Clay Coon video. You don't have to pay the tool truck prices. So you can get them.
Must be the accent.
I can't do that either. You can get them online. So you can get them off of Amazon. Right. And they are very, very good tools. Very, very good. And they make that job so much. You know, Mike knows this. He knows looking at them. Like the Mazda uses this little nail clip that has a little button in the center.
Right.
And you pull that up, and then the whole thing comes out. Toyota is the opposite. You take that button and you push it down. Like, what were these guys, like Mortal Enemies, who decided, like, to do this?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why does Nissan have a wire connection that you have to push the top portion in order to pull the connection apart compared to prying it up?
Yeah. Push in to pull out. That's
Yeah. Well, and other things maybe, but working on cars, no.
No, not. So listen, we didn't do this at the top of the hour. I have to say that if you, people are diligently finding us on the stream, things are all for cock these days. It's a mess, but you can always find us on motormouthradio.com. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at the same names, and on Instagram we're on Joe's favorite, real_motormouthradio, and that's where we put pictures of this stuff up so you guys can see it and commiserate with us and say, oh, too bad you guys get to smoke your job. And you can communicate with us. Our email address is up there, and watch some Motormouth videos on YouTube. We have a couple up there. We're going to work on that soon. Chris, do we have an honor group of the hour this fine sunny day?
Yes, we do. Of course we have an honor group of the hour on this fine Sunday. The Motormouth Radio honor group of the hour. If you own a part, a car part that you have no clue where it came from, where did this radio knob from that 48 Hudson come from? Yeah. Where did that bumper from that Volkswagen Beetle come from? Where did that whole entire car come from that's sitting in my bathtub? So I'm Chris Switzer. We have more of Motormouth Radio coming your way from parts unknown right after these good words. I'm going to hit this button now.
On 90.3 WHPC.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 5 for 2 hours of Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities. An occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 5. on Revelations right here on the Voice of Nassau Community College 90.3 WHPC.
This show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Lynbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop you want to have your car fixed at. CARSTAR Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. And yes, se habla español. More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
This show is brought to you by On the Road Again Motorcycle School. Hi, I'm Steve Bertolini, the president of On the Road Again Motorcycle School, and I'd like to tell you that life is short, so live a little by learning how to ride a motorcycle. Classes are available from beginner riders to advanced, including private lessons. Lessons are offered on the campuses of Nassau Community College and Suffolk Community College, also offering the license waiver class, where you can skip the DMV. More information about On the Road Again Motorcycle School can be found by calling 631-862-RIDE. That's 631-862-RIDE. Or online at lrn2ride.com.
All right, back at you here at Motormouth Radio. Ray Guarino running this show from the basement and the salt mines of Long Island. I'm Chris Switzer, just manning the fingers and toes of buttons and screws and switches and fixtures and all kinds of good stuff here at Motormouth Radio. And Ray's still on camera, so he may sound muffled. I don't know.
You give me a cue if it doesn't sound right, and I'll go, I want to show you. Last week, I was driving my Mazda, and I had the AC on because it was very hot. I made some visits to the cemetery. You know, you got to go and visit your family. Mm-hmm. And, left it on, got out of the car, said my piece. I'm not staying there too long. You know, I get back in and I noticed the car felt a little, not as cold as it was. I'm like, hey, okay, let me drive a little. I noticed my temp gauge that I keep in the vent register, it was creeping up. It was around 65 going to 70 degrees where it had been 40. I said, oh, that's odd. So I drove a little more and the gauge kept going up. I'm losing AC. So I said, all right, let me shut it off. So I did, opened the windows, and a little while later, I was on my way to the shop. A little while later, I stopped at a light, and I saw like a little bit of puff. I always see these stupid little remarks, just this little puff of smoke out of the right side crease of the fender come up. I'm like,
what the world is that?
I don't know. But now I'm watching like temperature gauge. I want to see, am I on fire? I don't have a fire extinguisher in that car. It ended up what it was the coil, the electromagnetic coil that's behind the AC clutch is now a problem. So I ordered it online. And this is, I want you to see this, Chris. I got this box delivered on my doorstep yesterday.
Okay, I can barely make it out in your pixelated image. I can see it. It looks like it's black crayon. What is written on the label there?
That's the label. No, the what I want to show you is there's no tape on this box. The flap just opens up, and you right. This is the way the box was sent to me.
You're kidding.
And I go inside. Everything is there, and here is the AC. Here's the clutch assembly. This is the actual clutch. This is the pulley with the bearing. This part with the wire is the coil. This is a big coil of wire that when it gets the signal from through the AC system, through the pressure switches and all, the coil energizes, which electromagnetically locks the clutch. Now, that's how your AC works.
How did you diagnose this problem?
Okay, it was it wasn't too hard. The thing we did was, well, first I checked the AC to make sure that I had refrigerant, which I did.
Right.
And then with a good strong light, and I will say, yes, it was a Snap-on LED light. Those things rock, man.
Okay. Did you wear it on your head?
No, we looked down with the car running, and that compressor is way at the bottom.
Yeah.
And when I activated it, you'd see it like skipping a little bit, like not locking and staying locked.
Right.
So the clutch wasn't locked, and it either means the clutch was bad, or in this case, the coil, and that was the other tip off. That was that little woof of smoke I saw. It was probably a couple windings of that coil saying bye bye.
Right.
And but I can't believe the way this was, like, they took this off a shelf and they mailed it. Not a piece. They didn't even put the label across the seam. They just threw it on the box and shipped it. I was like, God, that's
dangerous. If I'm shipping anything out, I will cover every seam on the box with tape. I mean, I'll almost make like a single ball of it'll be like hermetically sealed before I send it out. Because you know those things are rolling on conveyors, and all you need is the edge of a box to grab a side of the conveyor belt and spin it around and flip off. And it's, you know, these things go on. So the best thing to do is, if it's a piece of tape, just do the seams, do all the seams, no ridges, nothing, no ridges. I'm tired of ridges.
Very surprised. I've actually changed my taping strategy. I used to, you know, triple, quadruple tape seams. And then I get stuff in the mail that has like one hank of tape on it, and it survives. So I said, you know what? Less is more. I'm going to use a little less.
Yeah, so. No, that's for sure. Every time I'm mailing anything out, that's basically what I do. One strip of tape neatly placed on there, and usually 9 out of 10 times you're fine. But tape everything. All the seams get taped, everything. And so far, knocking on wood here, we've been okay. Everything is
fine. What I have to do is I have to change this, and it's a matter of a bolt in the center, and then use a 3-jaw puller to pull it off the snout of the AC compressor.
Now, how are you going to get in there, Bunky?
Through the right wheel well, you pull the wheel off, and you take the inner fender liner out, and it's right there, because it's a transverse. This is when a transverse mounted engine comes in handy, because it's facing right below the, it's like right there by the crank, facing through the wheel well. And over the winter, you may remember this story. Last year, I finally decided to change the serpentine belt and the AC belt on the car because they were original. I never changed them. Now, the serpentine is on a tensioner, no biggie, but the AC belt is what's called a stretch fit belt. And just like the Sansa belt slacks you wore back in the 80s.
I miss those.
I know. the belt now, the pulley for the device does not adjust. So the AC compressor is solidly mounted like the alternators are now when a serpentine belt takes up the slack.
Right.
So the AC compressor is mounted fixed and the crankshaft is fixed also. So the belt is made, it's a Gates belt, and it actually stretches. You have to shoehorn it on those pulleys. And what you do is to get it off, you just take a knife and you cut it.
You're kidding. You have to cut the belt to get it off?
Cut it off, right. But you could use the tool to unshoehorn it, which is what I'm going to try now. Now, I learned something. When I did the belt the last time, I bought the Gates tool. It's a little red anodized tool with a bolt in the middle, and you put that into the on the engine, and it shoehorns the belt over the pulley, you know, and stretch it just enough. Then the belt through heating cycles actually will shrink enough to be tight enough to keep the right pressure on the device, the AC clutch. Okay. So that's a new belt. I want to reuse it. But I found that when I went to use this tool, the obvious place to put the bolt was like in the center of the clutch, which then the tool didn't fit the outside diameter of where the belt was. And I tried every which way. It ended up, I did that during the week. I came back, did the show with Joe on a Sunday, told him about it. He goes, I don't know. I said, you want to get your eyes on it? After the show, we went to the shop. I put the car in the lift. He looked at it and says, damn, I don't know. This doesn't make sense. So we literally, we put it on, and a couple times we were like a tooth off one way. Then we were a tooth off the other way. So we made a horseshoe out of a little piece of plastic laying around the shop and got it on.
Wow.
And now I watched the video. I researched this all again. The paperwork from Gates doesn't show it. The videos didn't show it. In one video, I saw something where the tool doesn't mount on the compressor. It mounts on the back of the crank pulley. And that's how, like, you know, if they would have said that in the first place.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm not kidding. I don't know how to use the tool. I don't have to be a boob. And I'll horseshoe the belt back on because it's a new belt. It was about $30. That was an expensive belt.
Yeah. I would totally reuse that. Cut the belt? Are they out of their minds?
Well, no. You know, if you're changing a belt that's old, what's the difference? You're going to throw it out anyway, right?
Well, yeah. But like you say, when you have repairs to do that involve, I mean, what would happen if you wanted to replace the timing belt in the car? You got to cut both belts to, or if you had to replace an alternator,
the serpentine comes off of the tensioner. You'd have to cut the stretch fit belt, yes, and replace it when you put everything back on. Exactly. Mm. Yeah. But you know, that if you're doing a timing belt, I mean, that's the time. A lot of times I will say, hey, listen, you know, let's put belts on the car. Let's do your water pump because you want to take it off and it's hidden. So let's do that. Sometimes there's a timing seal that you want to change on certain engines. You know, cam cover seal. It's just certain things are better. It's like, if I got to do this job later, you're going to pay the same labor and I got to take the stuff off all over again.
Yep.
So
that's for sure. And the last timing belt I did, believe it or not, was in, second to last timing belt I did was in January. And that was a job I did not want to do.
Which car was that?
I had a Subaru. I did the timing belt on the Subaru, which wasn't a bad job. Actually, the worst part about the whole job was getting the bolts off the timing case cover because the bolts had disintegrated. Literally, there was no head of a bolt there. I had to get the jaws of a vice grip and kind of clamp it on there and pray every time I turned it because I couldn't even get the inductor in there because, of course, they're deep set into about deep set, a half an inch, three quarters of an inch into the timing case cover. So that was a chore, but that was the reason why I changed the timing belt because I'm looking down and going, look at those things. It's like they pulled them from the bottom of a lake. Where did they get these bolts from?
There
weren't bolts anymore. They were like mush of metal.
You know, that reminds me of a couple of years ago, I was working on the Mach 1 Mustang. It's going to be coming back into my orbit soon.
Oh boy.
And it was a total rust bucket underneath, but I had to change the idler arm. And you got to go through the frame to get one of the bolts and nuts. And it was just so rusted and the nut was misshapen. It just so happened that Thursday I was on the Snap-on truck and he showed me these FDX sockets, which are, they're like a little smaller and tighter. They're made for taking rounded or rusted fasteners off. Mm. Gear Wrench makes a set of bolt biters, which is absolutely phenomenal. The Gear Wrench stuff looks superb. I don't have them, but. And I didn't buy these. I passed on.
What is a bolt biter, though?
It's the name. That's Gear Wrench's name of the socket. And again, it's like a fluted design that you can kind of tap it on. It actually bites a rounded bolt.
Wow.
So that was Thursday. I think I was doing this job on Saturday. And I was like, damn it. I had these things on my hand, and I didn't buy them. It's like, come back, Bill. Come back. And he didn't come back. So I waited. And the next week, I bought the Metric and the Americans. I said, give me them both because of, I should know. Like, if I see something, I say, ooh, that's a good idea, buy it. That's tool truck mentality.
Yes.
Let's spend $600.
That's how much they cost?
Well, for the American and the Metric, I wouldn't be surprised if they were $300 a set. I wouldn't be surprised. You don't ask. Listen, you don't ask. You when you have something in your hand on a tool truck, you never ask. I've heard Clay do it like, gee, what's this sucker cost? And then, and then they always give you that coy. Well, I don't know. It depends if you have a trade-in or it's different. Well, on a video, it's different in different areas. The regional pricing could be different. I understand that. But
right.
I just tell the guy, listen, how bad is it? And he'll usually give me not too bad. All right, do it. You got my – and like Brian, this is what I love. Like Brian has my credit card number on file. So when I find something I like, I tell Brian, hey, what's this deal here? This or whatever. And then he'll send me the info. I'm like, yeah, just send it. So it's great having a tool guy on call, because you can
on speed dial.
You just have to wait for the stuff, but it's nice to have I tell you, some of the tool guys are the nicest guys in the world, and rightfully so. They're in business to service their clientele. So you think they should be. But some aren't. Some are real hell on wheels.
I'm thinking, they're there to make your life fairly easy. That's what the tool is supposed to do. It's supposed to make your life easy, for crying out loud. I mean, but the problem is, and this is my always been my lament. There are so many tools to remove rusted bolts and nuts and difficult bolts and things like that. And I think to myself, the way you avoid purchasing all those tools is to buy a car that's not a rust bucket.
Yeah, Brian just sent me a picture of the Matco tool, which is I've seen. It is just like a shoehorn. And he also sent me a picture of the clip tools. I'm going to send that to you after the show.
Okay.
So all you right. can see what's going on.
You know, that was the first thing I did when I bought the TR6 was I got under the car and I went, this thing is all rusty. Oh, I like it. Let me buy it. Well, that was 20 years of sheer misery. When I bought the Chrysler, I was like, this thing is a complete mess. And I got under it and I went, but it's not rusty. It had a thin film of rust on everything. But so far, I haven't snapped anything. And I'm hoping that continues on, but it's just I'm thinking along those lines where you knew my thought process was it's rusty, no big deal, we'll replace it, and you've seen some of the cars I've driven. I'm trying to avoid that now.
Yeah.
I'm trying to avoid it. Make sure the body and the chassis are all there. Don't buy a car that has big gaping holes of air. You're buying air. And I'm thinking, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm done with that.
Good idea. No, very good idea.
So it avoids all these parts.
Yeah, it saves you trouble down the road.
Huh?
It saves you a lot of trouble down the road as well.
Oh, gosh, yes. I think we have had the same laments. You had that 71 Challenger at the same, pretty much the same time I had a 71 Mustang convertible.
Okay.
And this car was the rustiest car I had ever seen.
And me too. My Challenger, that's why I sold it.
Yeah, that's why I sold the Mustang, because it was, you couldn't get four people in the car and open the doors.
Wow.
That's how bad it was. You know, when the bottom seam of the door was wider than the top of the seam of the door. When the quarter panel is touching the top of the door, but not touching the bottom of the door, that's the car you walk away from. Yeah.
Sounds like your TR6.
Yeah, it was. TR6 was the same way. What was that?
The gap used to change as you went over road surfaces and bumps.
Oh, it sure did. And the TR6 had that little problem because I had jacked it up on one side and did some welding work under there and then jacked it back down. And the top of the door was wider. The seam on the top of the door was wider than the seam on the bottom of the door. And I'm like,
you always want to do structural work in the as loaded condition.
Yes. Two jack stands.
Right.
Instead of just one. And the funny thing was I did so much welding under that car, I don't remember what I did.
Yeah.
I was like, what? I don't know. I don't keep accurate records. I don't know. So so that's when we sold the car.
Yeah, that's you got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. Kenny Rogers said it.
I had a laugh because I was thinking about that time we were doing the show and Joe was coming in as our third banana at the time, because I do remember saying, I put the TR6 up in the air and I put the jack stand strategically so the car would bend back. And I remember you and Joe laughing in unison saying, that will not work, Demi. Yeah. And I'm like, oh no, this is going to work. I had the car loaded with car parts. I had bricks, cinder blocks in there. I had all kinds of junk in that car trying to weigh it down while it was on the jack stands. And believe it or not, the door matched up pretty well while it was in the air. But you and Joe both said, no, once you put that thing back on the ground, it's going to snap back to the way it was. And I'm like, pshaw, bourgeois, this is going to work. Donkey dust, horse hockey. This is going to work. It didn't.
And what happened?
It didn't. I put the car back on the ground and boink.
2-1, baby. 2-1.
The seam, I was like, God, there was nothing more I wanted to do than to prove you guys wrong. And I was foiled.
Well, you know, that's one of the great things about this show. I think you'll agree. that we've both found that no matter how good we think we are, we always come around, we always find other people, either as guests or co-hosts or friends, who just know so much more.
It's true.
It really is humbling. And we've learned a lot. We've learned an awful lot.
Oh, yeah. I've always said that. At one time I thought I was an aficionado, and I never realized I was I know my fair share. You know your fair share. And you know more than I do, that's for sure. And Joe knows more than both of us. But that was it was a joy. It's a pleasure to be proven wrong at times, to just say, okay, hey, this is what I tried. It didn't work. So don't waste your time. And just to be reminded of it at times.
You know, Joe sent me a text yesterday, and he was referring to a text I sent him about the Chevelle wiring harness that I had trouble with. Right. I guess he was catching up on old stuff. And he told me, look for a gray wire. And I said, Joe, I solved that problem about a week or so ago. I said, there was indeed a gray wire involved. And I said, the only problem was the schematics didn't agree with each other because they're from different sources. I said, and there was no component call-out information like you find today. And I said, so I didn't really have the information, all the information I needed to know. And then Joe wrote back and said, yeah. He goes, that's why I know what I know. And I said, boy, don't I know that. I said, that's why I contact you all the time, because you know stuff that the rest of us have forgotten.
Yes.
I said, but that's why when we're faced with those situations, you have to just use your best, the best conglomeration of knowledge and guesswork to get to the end of it. I was lucky that it worked for me.
No, I believe it. And what's wonderful about, and I do use that term wonderful, what's wonderful about fixing and repairing and handling vehicles is that you learn so much about everything between physics and biology and chemistry. And there's all sciences that are all mixed together in that one rolling thing that gets you from point A to point B as best possibly can. There's so much that goes along with that. And that's what I think working on cars has done. It's turned me into almost a well-rounded individual. It's like I know what anyone can be talking about just by working on cars, because we've all touched on it. And that's what happens, is some people segment themselves into their own expertise. And that's fine. That's fine, because Joe is the tech and the problem solver. And there have been times I've had to drop down and go, please, Uncle Avunch, help me. I can't dope this out. Yeah. And there are times where I had to come to you and go, please, help me.
And, that's the thing, Chris. We say this all the time. That's why we have our go-to guys. I got a guy. And if my guy don't have it, he knows a guy. And I got a call this week from a guy who was a friend of a friend and said, listen, so-and-so told me that you're the guy to talk to about this. Can you help me out? And I'm like, all right, let's talk. In my mind, I said, let's talk a little bit first and let me see if you're a total, a not so nice individual, somebody that I want to talk to, or if you're
right.
Let's vet this out first, and then then we'll go forward. And of course, it did work out that the guy was okay and he was solid and picked up right on what I was talking about, and we moved forward. And that's how we, that's how it works. That's because it's gone totally the other way.
No, I totally understand.
Yeah, okay. So that's. We all have those guys. I don't know about what you do up there in the outer limits of the world up there. We have deer as neighbors.
Right.
What kind of guy do you go to up there? I mean, do you have any guys up there?
There are, and we're still vetting them out as well. There are guys that are up here, and that's where I'm having a quandary. Do I go over the bridge and go see my guys, or do I establish new relationships with new service people in this business? And okay, that's where I'm having where I'm pretty much I'm waffling, because I still like to do my own work.
And I know service people, you should have someone up there you could go to, because it could be rainy, snowy, you don't have time. Yeah. But I'm talking about just technical guys, sometimes there's a neighbor or a guy down the block who just knows, he knows brakes or electrical or carburetors or so, or fuel injection. you know, those guys, those are the relationships that have to be honed. But if you start hanging out with that 300 at a cruise night or two, you'll meet them.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And know-it-alls, too.
Oh, yeah. Not only know-it-alls, but especially with this car, you meet the aficionados, too. They're the ones that, you definitely – because they come over and they start pointing. They go, is that right? Is that right?
You know that clip is wrong?
Yeah. Right. Those guys. And I'm like, go ahead. Have at it. Go ahead.
I love that because that's why I'd say, you know what? I don't have it with me, but I carry a prize around because you're the – I'm waiting for the first guy to call that out, and you're the guy.
You're like, the guy.
And in balloons, and I have like a cannon that shoots, and I got this girl coming out of a kink, but she, I don't have it today. The day is off. I'm like, damn, you know, give me your home address because I'm going to come to your house and bestow that honor on you, you freaking moron piece of crap, you mother dumping.
Yeah. And on that note yeah. –
That's the New York attitude. Like,
what a way to mop up a show.
We try. Little attitude.
You betcha. All righty. For Ray Guarino, the host of this fine establishment, I'm Chris Switzer. And of course, Ray, you want to throw my line out? Go right ahead.
Don't follow us home, please. Well, I am home, so try and find me.
We're out of here. For Ray, I'm Chris, Motor Mouth Radio. We'll be back next week. See ya, 90.3 WHPC. Bye-bye.